Ja.
Good night.
Just make sure I'm recording. Yes, I am recording.
It does feel when it works great like this, it does feel like we should quit while we're ahead.
Nobody's dropped off yet. We can't have a show.
2012 summary, no hard evidence. Enjoy your New Year's.
I wanted to start the show by saying that I believe this is our 16th show this year. We've done, I think we've done 16 shows this year.
Wow.
I know.
Now, how about the quality of those shows?
Well, if you edit it down, there's about 2 hours of content.
You can distill it down to one good show.
But nobody said they wanted quality. They just kept saying, more shows, more shows. So there we go. We pumped them out like little baby rabbits. It doesn't matter if they all survive.
Finding Bigfoot has infected us.
Sorry, I muted myself while I took a sip of my beverage. So here we go, last show of the year.
Unless, of course, somebody finds a Bigfoot in the next week or so.
In which case,
we ought to do another one.
We'll probably pull together to... No, this is it. Last show of the year. I don't care what happens. We're done.
Actually, that's a really good question. What would it take, apart from an actual physical discovery, to warrant an emergency show?
I think the release of some DNA study.
Yeah.
One or the other.
The proper one.
Either one. I mean, because right now we don't have any, right? We have nothing.
Yeah, and apparently the Sykes thing is not as he originally said he was going to, or the newspaper article had indicated that there was going to be a release this year. But now, the update was via Meldrum, I guess.
Yeah, it was on his website at the beginning. He said that he has a range for release, a time frame, and we're in that time frame. But according to Meldrum on Facebook, they haven't even started doing the testing yet, so which is odd. I thought for sure they had started, so apparently that's not true. So we're waiting still.
I'm wondering, though, how weird it is, because Sykes seems like, definitely the guy is respected. It seems like he's got the chops, but from the articles and various stuff I've read, I don't know how into it. I think he's got kind of that comfortable, skeptical position that maybe he's it leads to a little laziness in this regard, because he enthusiasm is not something I've gotten from what I've read about the guy in regards to this project. It's more like, oh, okay, I'll do this. I'll open this up to samples from people I trust. But he himself doesn't seem very jazzed.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't believe anyone in the group I'm a part of has actually had contact with him. That may not be true, but I think it's the case. I think we've gone through Meldrum or what have you, but I don't know what his motivation is. I don't know why he's doing this, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I know that he's skeptical. That's something that I'm aware of, but I don't know what is motivating him to do this now as opposed to, 2 years ago or whatever. Maybe the technology's changed. Maybe he's just tired of people sending him stuff. Well, I don't know.
I think it's just accumulated. I mean, he's probably heard enough anecdotal evidence, and from, let's say, 2 years ago, there's certainly, I think, more serious scientists interested in the continued study of the phenomena. So he's probably opened up to that, but he's obviously probably not at that level of someone like Meldrum of some would even say maybe Jeff's a little too excited about it, or has been, getting in the way of objectivity. But I don't know. I'm sure we'll probably hear something within the next 2 or 3 months.
Well, I for one think that this project has gone on too long without enough wild ass speculation. So let me just add a little bit of my own to the mix.
Please do.
Because there's just not enough crazy going on with this. I think it's possible that when he laid this out, he had a very good idea how long this would take, and hence the timeline that he initially gave. And I can't help but wonder if the delay that we're looking at now is due to an extra attempt on his part and those that he's working with to establish provenance for the samples that they are receiving.
Yeah. So something interesting came up.
Right. Perhaps. You don't want to say, oh, well, you know,
yeah,
we've got this really interesting result, but we can't prove whether it came from Southeast Oklahoma or Southeast Asia.
Hmm. Right.
That's possible. I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
Paul, do you want to throw some idle speculation in there?
I don't know. I mean, I know when the Sykes project started, the reporting was that he was going to start with samples collected by Hoovelmans that are stored in the Musée du Zoologie in Lausanne, Switzerland, which is where all of Hoovelmans' papers are kept. Everything about the Minnesota Iceman, all the photographs and sketches are all stored at that museum. So that's where he was going to start. But obviously he opened it up to sample submissions sort of second half of this year. But one of the things that that was specified was when you're submitting samples is provenance. Got to provide details of what it is, where you found it, how you got it, etc. So, I mean, I've got to say, I always thought that his timescale was a bit on the short side.
Yeah, I was surprised at that. Yeah, I agree.
You know, we're talking about the original timescale was submission starting in May and publication sometime by the end of this year. I can barely write an email in that time.
and who knows? I mean, something, if he is specifically doing this himself, or he doesn't have a lot of staff members, I mean, who knows what's going on in his own life? I mean, there could be family issues or and sundry possibilities why it's being delayed. But
you guys got plenty of staff.
Yeah, yeah.
I shouldn't think he's got any shortage of staff. I mean, not only. Does he is a professor at Wolfson College in Oxford, but he owns his own DNA company provides. You know, you send your DNA sample to him, and he'll tell you which village in Africa you came from.
He's probably just lazy.
Yeah, I think that's the.
That's probably. He's just a lazy bastard. That's his problem.
Maybe his mind has been blown.
I suspect he's just being extra cautious.
Yeah, that's good.
Anything else. And the fact that he hasn't spoken about the project in any great detail, it bodes well.
Do you think his science is overkilled beyond reason?
And that quote is from
Melba Ketchum, who was talking on Facebook recently. So, you know, I have to imagine.
You're kidding. She was talking about this?
Apparently
she never talks about this.
Apparently
you
can talk about it now. The Russian journals are different. You can go ahead and say whatever you want. She said that their science was overkilled beyond reason. Beyond reason, I completely agree with that part. I think beyond reason, she clearly
I see a tombstone in her future.
overkilled me. Unfortunately, overkilled beyond reason. That's what her tombstone will say.
I fail to understand how you can overkill science.
Exactly.
You can kill it. You can totally kill it.
It's interesting that I was talking. I don't remember who I was having this conversation with, if it was on Facebook or somewhere else. But anyway, someone was complaining that, like, Melba Ketchum cannot be the Bigfoot story of the year, right? That she does not deserve that. And so, what I would say is, yeah, I understand. I would say that it isn't Melba Ketchum. What I would say is the story of the year in the world of Sasquatchery is DNA and interest in DNA and elevation of DNA, and I think just this focus on DNA as a possible route towards proving the existence of the animal.
I think that's an excellent point, but if they had to pick a person, it's just important to remember, you know, like how Time magazine does it too. I think Hitler was man of the year. So it's not whether the person was particularly good or bad.
True.
It's just who had the greatest impact, you know, in a particular sphere. So if it had to be a person, it would probably be Melba. But I like your designation of DNA, which is kind of a pre-person, I suppose.
Yeah.
I got nothing.
Not actually a person.
Yeah, no.
It's like the drunk uncle at the party. Nobody wants to claim him, but yeah, he's still the one that's making the biggest and the loudest show out of everybody.
And really, he's the reason you go, right?
Exactly.
You just can't wait to see what he does. So I'm looking at our list here on Facebook. We asked people, and we got a lot of comments. Tons, actually. I probably should have spent 5 minutes before the show looking at them, but I didn't. But yeah, just, I mean, the DNA...
It demonstrates how professional we are.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Very professional.
Keeps it fresh.
Todd Hale wants the GPS location of Area X. So, yeah. Okay, that's not going
to
happen.
Good to dream.
But oh, Colin, it's got to be tempting to just give him a GPS location.
Some yeah, random
here
spot.
You go.
Ames, Iowa.
The Denver International Airport or something.
That's why I don't geocache, is I would be the biggest dick about it. I would just be floating coordinates out there that were absolutely meaningless.
Coordinates that were actually like 8 feet up in the air or something like that.
Yeah.
Find out where Biscardi lives, and then right in the middle of his house.
Yeah. In his bathroom, his medicine cabinet.
I used to actually work at a business, and we unfortunately had a geocache right in front of our store. And it was so great because about once a week you would see these people just show up randomly in the parking lot and start fumbling around looking for clues and like looking at their GPS in one hand, and then they'd have their smartphone in the other. It was great.
That is great. Did you guys see this? I'm just bouncing around. The Spike TV show, $10 million. I know people who are going for this.
Yeah, you had mentioned that. I tell you, I'm not as much as I bag on Finding Bigfoot, and I've actually been thinking about this, Brian. Why maybe the one reason why you and I have such a different view on Finding Bigfoot, and it comes down to this. I think it's because you have children, and you have to, and you have that sense of wanting that being entertained is a good thing and important in a family, you know. And me, I live in a small wooden shack in Fontana alone. And
dreams.
In my broken dreams and a urine cup. But, I think, Spike, first of all, that's not encouraging that Spike, because they're just a pretty shitty channel. I mean, overly machismo stuff.
Did Spike used to be something else? Was that Tech TV at one point? What did Tech TV?
No. Tech TV morphed into G4, showing reruns of Cheaters. That gives you an idea. But I don't know. I think the potential for the show maybe could be pretty good, given if there's different teams. But it all depends on the mindset of the producers going in. If they're going to strive to have a sense of, let's say, scientific. Scientific rigor coupled with the entertainment. See, to me, those aren't mutually exclusive. You can have both, but you can tell it'll become pretty quickly known, like you can see in Finding Bigfoot, where it just gets its cornball and you don't trust the producers, that they're always jazzing it up before the commercials. I don't have a lot of faith, but I'm hopeful.
I think you're going to be horribly disappointed.
Yeah.
I don't. The Spike TV, by the way, started out as the Nashville Network in 1980.
You beat me to it. I'm on Wikipedia looking at
it. I knew it was something else. I just couldn't remember what it was. So it was the Nashville Network. From what I understand, I'm not going to say who I know, because I don't know if they said that they wouldn't tell anybody or what the deal is, but it sounds like it's going to be teams competing against each other. So I'm pretty sure this is going to be like a cross between The Amazing Race and Survivor and Finding Bigfoot and not Nova. There'll be no Nova mixed in. There'll be no National Geographic Presents mixed in. Pretty sure it's just going to be teams trying to prove Bigfoot. And of course, at the end of the day, it isn't like someone's going to win $10 million, right? They have to prove that – they have to bring like proof to the table. So what are the chances?
I can't help but think that the way the show is going to be done is you're going to have that big lofty $10 million hanging over your head. But each week there's going to have to be some humiliating challenge that gives some meaningless reward to one particular team, because otherwise, I mean, what else is there to strive for? You have to have something, some kind of brass ring each week for these people to be chasing after.
Right.
Because otherwise, you just end up with a bunch of people running around in the woods.
I mean, I cannot conceive of what this show will be like. You're exactly right, Sam, but I don't know what that is. I mean, how do you do, like, I don't know, let's just say it's 8, 10, 12 episodes, right? It's got to be something like that. How do you fill those episodes? I mean, this is the thing
that... Horse shit.
Bigfoot research is boring 99.9% exactly. of the time. You're just sitting around in the woods.
Well, I think if they're upfront about, like, kind of what Sam was alluding to, if you want to add almost like a game show thing to it, be direct about that. Then you don't have people like me getting all pissed off when they're trying to, present it under the guise of actual, like, serious scientific searching. But if you just say, hey, look, we're going to have some fun with this, and they'll maybe have discussions with people, maybe like Meldrum gets interviewed here and there, just mixing it up so that it's not just finding Bigfoot times four teams. Because that, I agree, is going to get weak 5 minutes into the first episode.
But people will still watch it.
Well, you know, people followed Hitler too.
Right. It's going to be just like that. It's going to be, you know, Hitler and Spike's $10 million Bigfoot challenge. Pretty much equitable in my mind. Right.
When historians look back, those things are going to be so close in the time frame.
If this show leads us into invading Canada or Mexico, I'm right there with you. But, you know, we got into we didn't get into it actually because we were going to save it for the show. But this idea that, you know, what is the role of science on television? And is television even a vehicle to perform science?
Yes.
Paul, what do you think? Because you didn't get into it, Paul. You haven't said anything so far. Wake up, Paul.
Oh, I'm here.
Paul's napping.
No, I think there's a place for science on TV. The trouble is that science is boring for most people. Now, we've got quite a few shows on TV and on the radio here that are science-orientated and are done fantastically well. I mean, just this week, Sir Patrick Moore died, who held the record for the longest-running TV show in the world with the BBC's Sky at Night, an astronomy program that he broadcast for over 50 years. So we've perhaps got a better background here of science shows. We have programs on TV at the moment that just deal with maths and the shows about maths and difficult maths. And there are various other science shows. I grew up with a fantastic show on BBC called Think of a Number, where we had a presenter who made maths and physics fun. So I think there's definitely a place for science on TV. It's just got to be done right. It's got to be entertaining.
Exactly. I mean,
one of the biggest radio shows at the moment is on BBC is The Infinite Monkey Cage, which has a combination of science and comedy.
Did you say Infinite Monkey Cage?
The Infinite Monkey Cage.
All right.
Let's immediately change the name of the show to this.
The Infinite Monkey Cage. That is a fantastic name.
It violates international copyright laws. I don't care. That's the name of our show now.
Screw them.
it stars a physicist and a comedian. They're both funny in their own right. I forget why the show is called The Infinite Monkey Cage, but it's I don't suppose it really matters. It's a good name. We regularly have astronomy shows on TV, live stargazing, live where we have
live astronomy.
Live astronomy on TV.
But here's the problem. Your TV doesn't count. It's the BBC. It's a little weird, right?
Oh,
you also put cricket matches on television. So,
hey, they rock, man.
I'm just saying.
But yeah, it can be done, and it can be done in a good way. But it's got to be made entertaining, and it's got to be made something that people want to watch. And if you do it right, you get a great audience and you entertain people and educate people.
See, well, what we were talking about offline, and I'm glad we're talking about it now, is my point is 99% of the time, television is reporting on science previously done, not doing science, Right. So this idea that you're going to actually conduct science through television. So that would suggest that there's actual science to then turn around and turn into a show, because you're basically repeating, you're telling the story of actual science. Nova is always telling a story about science that already happened.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we don't have any real science that's happened, right? We don't. Well, I mean, Brian Sykes is a glaring exception to that.
I think you can show, like, if you had, let's say it was a Bigfoot-oriented show. What you would have, and I can't believe I'm admitting this, but even Finding Bigfoot to some small degree gives you these little snapshots of science. I mean, if something's going on, let's say they're putting up a camera trap, or they're, how to search for hair samples or stuff like that, that can be done entertainingly. It's not like keeping a camera on for 8 hours and someone watching. Obviously, you can't. You have a half hour, an hour long show. But a series of those snapshots intermingled with entertaining stuff has been done. Like, again, I think Bill Nye the Science Guy, perfect example. Mythbusters, entertaining shows about science, and Mythbusters yes. specifically doing science. They're showing this, utilizing physics and whatnot. I think you could do this with a Bigfoot-type show. But I think it would work better almost like a monthly show instead of doing every
week. Yeah, I don't think there's enough there.
Yeah, to do it every week, it's just going to be a lot of pabble.
So then you got a problem of just like how the business of television works. A network doesn't want to buy a monthly show. They want a weekly show. They want repeat audience. They want to fill a hole in their schedule.
HBO, you're so cynical. Come on, man. Think outside the box. Well, we should do this show, all of us, all four of us. We fly Paul in once a week. And isn't it almost ready that we can virtually transport ourselves with some kind of holographic thing where we meet in a wooded area and then are getting up yet?
No.
Damn it.
We could green screen the whole thing.
Paul Vella, exactly. 3D printer.
Well, CNN was doing the hologram thing with Will I Am, and that didn't really work out so well.
What I think is interesting is this. Science can be boring. A lot of science is boring. A lot of people involved in science are interesting because they're eccentric, they're odd, they're, socially inept. They make for good TV just by being who they are.
Are you sure you're not a TV executive?
You take that and you apply that to Bigfoot, and it's just magnified. Brian, you said it yourself, 99.9% of Bigfooting is boring. Mm-hmm. But the people involved in it, 99.8% are batshit crazy. These people are made for TV. So all you have to do to make a successful show that has real science is to find a way to balance out the boringness and the craziness.
And I would say that
and it starts with this music.
I don't disagree with you at all, Sam. And I think that Finding Bigfoot has, in a way, tried to turn that into a formula, right? Because they've got a reasonable person on that show. They've got, they have a gradation, right? From Renee on one side and maybe Matt on the other side. But that's why I also think that this Spike Television thing, the people who are in the field are interesting, right? What they do most of the time is not that interesting. I mean, it's interesting for about 20 minutes, and then you realize, well, they're just out in the woods. Oh, that's pretty. Oh, look, they think they found a track. They're going to cast it. Okay. Not a whole hell of a lot happens. So yeah. I think they're going to focus on the people, and they're not going to focus on the science, because there really won't be much to do in a scientific capacity, and I think that will disappoint Scott, and I hate it when Scott's disappointed.
No, I think we basically agree. It's a semantic thing we've got going on. I think... I would disagree with you just in a notion of degree. I think there could be a show that's better. This isn't saying much. Better than Finding Bigfoot, but it would not. A weekly show, I think, is too much. Something monthly, something like maybe even HBO or even like a special, where you could have the whole ball of wax. You show the variety of the people who are like very serious minded about it, all the way down to the people who are having 18 sightings a week.
Wasn't that Legend Meets Science? I mean, didn't we have that in Legend Meets Science?
No, we had it in Journey Toward Squatchdom, which is available at
Amazon.com. Yeah, exactly. Just do search Squatchdom, and you'll probably only get the one thing.
It's true.
No, okay, so we had the Legend Meets Science, which worked on some levels, but not a lot, and it definitely needs to be updated, because a lot of that stuff now is questionable. There was the Nat Geo, was it Nat Geo, a couple, was it last year? That was actually a really good show, but they're few and far between. And I continue to think that there's not enough for a serious weekly program. I think we agree on that.
FYI, the Nat Geo one, I believe, is available on Netflix now.
Oh, really? I really liked that one.
I was cruising the documentaries the other night, and I'm pretty sure I came across it.
That one was very good.
Brian, on this note, somebody had asked in the list, and it's connected to what we're saying. I think it was Mark Jones, and he put it pretty well.
He says PGF or pole sitting, which is more exciting.
Yeah, he was. What do you think the future holds in research, new techniques, fresh new angles to look at? And will it go into a deep abyss and lay semi-dormant for a while and read Cosmopolitan magazine if nothing really promising comes about in wood apesmanship research? And I think that's a really interesting question. I mean,
I like wood apesmanship. I have to say, I really like that.
I got my badge in that when I was 12.
I'm a wood apesman.
Yeah. Sorry. But I think we're in the middle right now, especially with what you pointed out, the DNA emphasis this year, that I think we're going to see for a while a continued intensified interest coupled with finding Bigfoot that is going to breed these shows like Spike TV. You know, maybe something happens where some actual discovery occurs as a result, but there's primarily, in all probability, a bunch of ballyhoo, because if it's involved with reality TV, it's just bullshit, unless it's done in a clever way.
But here's the thing, and I speak from some experience, because we've had people work with the TBRC in the past in television. We've had people interested in doing sort of pilots with the TBRC, and we've had a ton of people. I mean, I'm telling you, a couple of times a month we get somebody reaching out to the TBRC for some television project. TV is corrupting. TV is not – if you're serious, TV is corrupting, because you will not have control over the finished product, right?
You don't know.
You don't know. They're not interested. And this is why, you know, when the Finding Bigfoot had that little special on before their season premiere, where the producer sort of, you know, apologized to them more or less on air. He wants to tell an engaging and interesting story. It doesn't really matter what happens, right? So at that point, you're just a pawn.
I would say this. There is definitely truth in what you say, but I think you're right. Ultimate control. If you partake in these shows, you sign away. You have no. I mean, that's one reason. I mean, I was in TV for many years. It's one reason I like to do documentaries. I have the final say in what I'm doing.
Right.
So, but I think it's too cynical to say they don't literally care about anything. I think they want the truth to be out there. They just tend to, a lot of them. They lead toward that sensationalizing, especially when going to the commercial break, to keep people watching, and especially in American TV reality stuff. And that is personally, and I think most of us here agree, and a lot of our listeners, it's boring. Your attempt to try to make it so friggin' interesting and fakey is in fact boring and cheesy. So, you know, back to what we were saying, a weekly show, it just seems to... Yeah, it's kind of run its course. What are the odds that Bobo and Matt and Renee and Cliff are actually going to find a Bigfoot? Incredibly low. Incredibly low. Yeah. And it's for kind of numbnuts. I'm sorry, people who just think, I mean, again, unless you're just doing it for the quote-unquote entertainment value.
Well, yeah.
If you're involved,
what else are you going to do? I mean, why else are you watching that show?
I know, exactly. So, and plus, like we've said this several times before, if you're involved in this phenomena and you check about it via the web, friends and whatnot, any major discovery, you're probably going to know, unless, you know, you're going to know about it pretty soon, apart from something, let's say, like Sykes's DNA thing.
That's a really good question. I would love to ask one of them that, and maybe I will reach out to the ones that I have contact with. But what happens if they actually find Bigfoot? I would think that if they had up to this point, some of us would know. I mean, they haven't found him yet. So what happens? Do they have a protocol? I mean, if they actually – and I don't even know what that means, quote-unquote, find Bigfoot.
Well, I don't. Yeah, it's by the issue we've talked about several times. The kill no kill thing is a channel going to be willing to be? If any channel was going to be, it would probably be Spike TV. That to be, would they outwardly promote the killing of one? I think they probably wouldn't do that because I think there'd be a lot of outrage about that. But I think, you know what? I bet they haven't even thought that far because, again, they're thinking, they're not going to find anything. Come on. I mean, even if somebody seriously believes you have a bunch of people traipsing around in the woods in various parts, the odds are so low.
I think that Spike TV is interested in whatever is going to be the most interesting thing on the screen. So if they think it would be interesting to have some groups that were looking to bag one and some that weren't, I think that
they're capitalizing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that would be good. That's a good discussion.
But the actual Finding Bigfoot television program.
I think it's Finding Bigfoot times four teams. That's basically what they're going to do, I think. Because Spike TV isn't known for being particularly innovative. You know, they're not what you would call, it's just flashy. That's a kind of vibe the channel has. So they're going to get a bunch of people, find as many Bobo-like people or Matt-like people, other groups, try to make it work. My hunch is if it does actually end up going to air, it won't last very long because it'll actually be believe it or not, than Finding Bigfoot.
I think it's a single season. I don't think that they're talking about more than that. I think that if my life were in a different place right now, I might go for a show like that. That'd be kind of fun.
Now, you see, if I was doing the show, I would put all four teams on a little island somewhere and have somebody dress up as a Bigfoot and see how long they can survive without any of the four teams actually seeing it.
That's a good idea. That's a great idea. That would be a cool show.
The first team to see it and photograph it wins.
One guy's the Bigfoot, right?
That would be awesome.
And he's all gillied up or whatever, and his job is to remain elusive. Right.
Yeah.
He still has to go into their camps and like steal their food or whatever because he has no other way to survive. Right.
But, oh, sure.
So the whole thing is that you have to see and get actual proof that this guy exists to win. That's a good idea. That's a show right there, man.
You're like a versus show. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's kind of a combination between Survivor and Finding Bigfoot.
What's that show with the Manhunter show where the guy goes and like tries to find people?
Man Tracker.
Yeah, Man Tracker. That's it. Man Tracker. Yeah.
See, if I were doing it, I would take my three teams and I would put those out in legitimate areas, you know, Pacific Northwest, the Four Corners, Oklahoma, Arkansas, that area, and maybe one other location. And then I would take one team and without their knowledge, put them somewhere that there was zero possibility of there being Sasquatches and then see how much evidence that group turned up.
like the LA Arboretum or something? You're going to drop them where there's nothing. That's funny. Yep.
See how many photos of stick structures you can find.
Death Valley.
Okay, well, we beat that to all hell.
I think the use of television, I mean, if we look at what's happened in the UFO field over the last sort of 10 years or so, we've got to the stage now where the likes of Nick Pope, who's always been seen as a bit of an authority on the subject, is putting out press releases on behalf of PlayStation gaming companies to drum up interest in games. The whole thing, everything about the subject has been corrupted by television, by the media. There's so much infighting in the UFO world, and the Bigfoot world is going to go down the same path. In 10 years' time, it's going to be a joke. Nobody will take it. You know, if people don't take it seriously now, nobody will take it seriously.
It's been around. I mean, the quote unquote Bigfoot world has been around since the 50s. It comes and it goes.
Yeah, but it's becoming, I think, less and less credible when we should be getting more and more credible. Because
there's
so many fruitcakes and lunatics in the field.
But both going on at the same time. You've got more crackpots out there looking for it. But at the same time, I think you do have more scientists looking at it seriously. It's what makes it fascinating, actually. It's because of the explosion of information, theories, stories via the web, TV shows. Hey, when are these things are out? And they start reading Green's book and go, shit, this has been going on for years and years. Is there something to it? So it's a big mishmash. But I think both of these extremes, in a sense, are true. more crap out there, more you know, wheat to separate from the chaff, but more serious people looking into it. So
the more stick structures there are and the more stories of psychic Bigfoot there are, saying that they're looking forward to press releases and this sort of rubbish, the less chance there is of scientists being taken seriously.
So then what do you do? I mean, let's just say you're
Nessie.
Nessie, right. Well, anyway. Yeah,
bullshit. Well,
let's say this. Scott, Paul,
that's a good
point.
Because 30, 40 years ago, there were serious scientists taking an interest in Loch Ness. They didn't find anything conclusive in the same way that so far no scientist has found anything conclusive about Bigfoot. But the subject became such a joke that now nobody will touch it with a barge pole.
I disagree.
Loch Ness or Bigfoot? What are we talking? Which creature are we talking about here?
Ghosts? Are we talking about ghosts?
No, we're talking. I mean, you're talking about Loch Ness, right, Paul?
Yeah.
No one will go near Loch Ness because that's
Because it's a joke,
right?
I fear the number of lunatics and crackpots in the Bigfoot field, and they are becoming more and more vocal. I mean, let's not make any bones about it. A few years ago, we had Beck Yord and half a dozen of his followers with photographs with red circles in them. Now there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them on the internet. They're more and more vocal. We've got the likes of Melba Ketchum saying she's in regular contact with them and they're looking forward to her study being published.
To be fair to Beck Yord, though, there is no red circle artist anymore. That artisan with the red circle, he's gone. I mean, there's nobody really filling his red circle shoes. To your point, though, this is sort of a dig against the Bigfoot forums. The conversations that are happening there now are weird. You know, there's some, and people are having, serious conversations about some super weird stuff on the Bigfoot forums.
Bigfoot orgies?
You know, is Bigfoot eating our kids? You know, talking about, you know, Bigfoot and their mind powers, you know. The mental powers of Bigfoot is a thread I'm looking at right now. There's some really weird threads out there. And I don't know if that necessarily supports what you're saying, Paul, or not. I think there's always been lunatics in the field. And I think the internet helps them, of course, rise.
I think it's becoming more and more commonplace in the same way that the UFO field, you look back to the sort of 60s and 70s and people were talking about physical sources from outer space. They weren't talking about interdimensional greys and shape-shifting bugs and this sort of thing in the way that they do now. Now that the whole field is just full of lunatics.
So, but here is the way that I think that the field we talk about is different. Theoretically, somebody could prove this thing. You know, if three quarters of the show at least are pretty much certain that they exist. So if that's the case, if they really are there, and we really are talking about sort of a PR problem, because at the end of the day, if the problem is there's a bunch of freaks that are in your area of interest, but at the end of the day, your area of interest is founded in something solid, then it's really just a matter of time before the freaks don't mean anything anymore. Because at some point,
So maybe the answer is for everybody to get on with the research and not seek the publicity of TV shows. Because without publicity, the crackpots won't be heard either.
I agree.
I think most people, though, generally that crackpots have increased. But crackpots are going to believe crackpots. But I think most people, when they hear a crackpot idea, I'm going to try to say crackpot as many times as I can in this
crackpot
is they know it's crackpot. I mean, I think many people can distinguish between the basic idea that there might be a relic hominid or relic hominids about and some guy claiming because they got on a spaceship. I don't think most people I've talked to who aren't that interested in the topic, a lot of them will say, yeah, I can see something like that exists. But they don't immediately – they're not telling me, oh, I won't take that seriously because there's X number of people who think that they're connected to Neptune. I think most people have common sense and can distinguish the possibilities or the potentials within the phenomena.
What's also interesting about this field is that normal people keep getting drawn into it because normal, regular people keep having encounters and sightings. And so you've got this sort of constant influx of regular folks who...
eventually get hit by the crazy train.
Right. And either they will either get sucked onto the crazy train and become crazy themselves, or they just go like, oh my God, and they walk away in horror and disgust and forget that they ever had whatever encounter that they had.
Yeah. It's hey, that's why we do a show, man. Yeah.
A lot of it I think depends on what sort of person you are. If you do have an experience like that, you're going to want to go one of two ways. One of three ways. You're either going to shrug it off and forget about it. You're going to start looking into it in a proper, sensible, scientific manner that, I want to find out more about this. Or you're going to go batshit crazy. I know people certainly in the UFO field here who have had similar experience to me in I had a very straightforward UFO sighting, and it was a UFO. It wasn't a flying saucer. It was just something I couldn't identify in the sky. Mm-hmm. But I've known other people that have had that same type of experience and have gone absolutely off the deep end. One of my friends committed suicide. A friend of a friend, committed suicide because he couldn't cope with how crazy his life had got in trying to find the answer to what he'd seen. Whereas for me, okay, that was interesting. Didn't really think much of it. I'm never going to prove what it was, so I don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose there's something built into people who will try to make sense of it. I mean, that's the thing about UFOs are different too, because of course it's something you can't identify, right? By definition, that's why they're called UFOs. You see this thing, you don't know what it is, and then you try to force it into some little spot in your brain to make it make sense. Instead of, some people might have the ability to just let it float freely out there in this, like, I don't know field.
Yeah.
But some people might try to shove it into a hole, and that would turn into government conspiracies, that would turn into interdimensional grays, that would turn into all kinds of craziness. And that's one of the things about UFOs that's weird is that it's almost a Rorschach test, right? You can make of it anything you want because it is so indeterminate, just the nature of the field.
I think that's a really good point you made, Brian. In a wider sense, we've talked about this on the show too, is just how important, not just from a scientific point of view, but from a sanity point of view, as Paul was alluding to, that it's okay not to know. Mm-hmm. That something happens, you experience it, you report on it. And if you can't shove it into a category, it's okay. I mean, it's not like people will condemn you or whatever, or you shouldn't condemn yourself. There's so many things in life just generally that we experience that we may not, motivations of people, a lot of things during, we're finite beings. We're not gods. So if you can be comfortable with that unknowingness, I think you've taken a good step to actually keeping a clear mind and actually finding out something, if there is something to be found out in any particular.
Thank you so much for saying that, because so many times when I'm reading discussions online or listening to people talk about the subject, it's almost like it has become taboo to say, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's perfectly okay if you don't have an answer to look somebody in the face and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And instead, people start to try to fill that vacuum. It's like the couple that they've been together too long and they probably should have split a long time ago.
Kind of like
and
us.
Exactly. And they can't sit in that comfortable silence. They have to find something to constantly be filling that void between them because they've lost that sense of connection and that comfort.
Yeah.
And you see that over and over again. And so many times I just want to, shake somebody and say, look, it's okay. It's okay that you don't know. When a skeptic comes at me and says, well, where are the bodies? I don't know.
Right.
I don't have a good answer for that. And instead of me just pulling something out of my ass,
right,
I'm going to be honest about it.
My first conversation, when I have conversations with people about this who you know, are not in the field or whatever, aren't the people I usually talk to. Like when I'm just start talking to somebody about this, half the things I say to them are, I don't know. Because how do you know? There is really, there's no way to know. And you know, what happens is, again, some people can let things float freely out there in the unknown area, but other people, Matt Moneymaker, always has to have an answer. And so this is why the other day on the Bigfoot, on Finding Bigfoot, they had a little thing saying that Bigfoot do not sneeze. What? You know, I mean, no, well, because, you know, I think it's that, like, well, I must
make a definite statement.
Right, I must make a definite statement about this. So for A, they're immune to pepper spray is what the actual factoid was. And, oh, by the way, they don't sneeze. Bigfoot do not sneeze. There are sneeze-free, pepper spray immune animals. It's that kind of thing that just makes me...
Yeah, it's really... And Matt has... I've known him now 20 years. I mean, we haven't actually had any conversation or anything for about 12 years. But he always kind of had that basic personality trait. I don't know if it was, you know, his dad was a lawyer. He went to law school. It's almost like, well, I have to take a stance. I'm a lawyer, you know? Well,
and I also think it's when – it's entirely possible that this happens if you are – I'm not going to say attacked, but if you find yourself on the defensive end of a conversation – for years and years and years and years, and it's the same conversation every single time at some point, and you know for a fact that you're right, right?
Mm-hmm.
Matt knows they're real, right? He doesn't have any doubt in his head, obviously. So unfortunately, to buttress that, to make him maybe feel better about it himself or whatever, he needs to sort of build on all of this, like, they do this, they do that, they don't do that, you know, X, Y, and Z, this is how they are, when obviously no one can know these things for sure.
And I don't even think, actually, because I remember what, you know, this sighting that he said he had. I mean, I talked to him right after this thing happened back in,
a long time ago.
Yeah, in the mid-90s. Yeah. And he did not say it was a direct sight. It was like he saw red eyes in the night. And now he tells everybody he had a sighting, which is not the same. You saw red eyes, dude. That's what you saw. He didn't see a Sasquatch, if in fact they exist, right in front of him standing there. But I agree with your general statement that his faith in it, and there's a lot of religious parallels here as we're talking, it becomes so, in other words, faith morphs into perceived knowledge, which, and it's not. It's like when people, you know, you talk to a fundamentalist about anything and they start talking about it, though it is. No, it is. Well, Jesus said this, and we don't even know if he actually, you know.
What were you going to say, Sam?
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, he's kind of in a conundrum because it's hard to bill yourself as an expert
right. And
then turn around and say, I don't know.
Yeah.
No one's a Bigfoot expert, unless there's some guy who's habituating one.
I would agree. Yeah, I would agree with you completely. I mean, you can be an expert on the material. You know,
yes, exactly.
you can be well read on all the books and be up on all of the, you know, the current issues and things going on within the field.
Right.
But no one is an expert on Bigfoot. But that's not stopping him from billing himself as an expert on the actual creature.
Well, no, it's a multifaceted career, so he has to be, right?
Yeah, and once you do that, then and he's right, you lose the ability to just look at the camera and say, well, I don't know. I don't know why they do this. I don't know why they do that. I don't know if that's true or not.
And again, we've said it before on the show, the irony, not even a paradox, the direct contradiction, that's the exact opposite of actual scientific thought.
And I think that's why, again, we're talking very specifically about that show, but that's why I like Renee so much, because she will say, I don't know what that was, right? I don't know what I just heard. I don't know what I just saw, you know, and because she doesn't, you know?
Exactly.
But all the rest of them... Yeah. Anyway,
It's just that we haven't even used the word. It's honest. It's okay to be. You know, it's like, well, I can't. You know, for all the reasons you guys already gave, but it's also dishonest. You're saying something that you do not know to be fact, and now you're claiming it as fact. You are in fact lying as well. So you're messing your own mind up. You become an untrustworthy person as a result. This is so many things negative that go with that type of mindset. We'll be right back.
Speaking of which, did you guys hear that Rick Dreyer killed another Bigfoot?
Yes. Is it Dyer or Dreyer?
Dyer. Well, I don't know. Dyer. I assume Rick Dyer's got another Bigfoot in a freezer.
Yeah, that's what's his nose, the Drudge of Sasquatchery reporting that.
That's exactly right, Robert Lindsay. Yeah.
I hope he's figured out how to freeze it this time.
Yeah. Successfully.
Maybe not have a freezer out in the middle of the woods. Maybe have one, you know, inside a house or something. But are we excited? Because this is great. This would be huge news, right?
Oh, it's fantastic news.
I've got the times ready to
interview me on freezer Bigfoot.
Does this make you feel dirty, Scott? That we're talking about this? That we're even bringing this up?
About what?
Rick just Dyer's about freezer and a Bigfoot? Bigfoot and a freezer?
No, I don't feel. Why would I feel dirty? It's just because
I don't know. You're like, I don't even want to talk about it.
Lindsay's just the guy. He looks for any material. Oh, you heard? Oh, I heard that. You know, the guy was That was part of the Georgia freezer thing. It's just
from a strictly just people watching psychological aspect. It's awesome. I mean, it's fascinating because you already have people who are starting to suspend their disbelief. You know, if you go out there and you read it, I mean, sure, most of us know that this is just absolute horseshit, but there's just that little, you know, that little bit of a minority out there that are starting to buy into it and starting to say, well, you know, surely somebody wouldn't say this if it wasn't true. Or, you know, he's involved with a film company and they sure seem like they're a legitimate film company and they would never allow
themselves. This is the story as reported by our drudge, Robert Lindsay. He says, Minnow Films of the UK, because that somehow makes it like more respectable, because they're from the UK, obviously. Anybody with a British accent is much more respectable. Anyway, Minnow Films of the UK was filming a documentary on Bigfoot hunters with Dyer on September 6, 2012, when Dyer shot cell phone video lasting 1.2 seconds of a Bigfoot eating meat out of a bait trap in a tree. Dyer was in his tent. In the next tent was the BBC film crew with two cameramen with shoulder-mounted cameras. At the same time, the film crew captured a three-minute video of the same Bigfoot eating from the bait trap. After Dyer recognized there was a Bigfoot at the bait trap, he ran out of his tent, clad only in his underwear, carrying a rifle.
There
it is. At that time, Dyer raised up his rifle and shot the Bigfoot in the back of the head. At that point, all hell broke loose as the crew wrestled the rifle away from Dyer. There it is. So,
yeah. Has anybody tried to – I mean, if anybody wanted to take the time to actually verify with the BBC on this or Brit or whatever?
It's Minnow Films. So apparently the animal is 7 feet 8 inches tall. It weighs 490 pounds, which doesn't seem like that's enough to be 7 feet 8 inches, but whatever. So apparently this is all done deal. Things been studied. So obviously any day now we'll be hearing all about that.
You know, if I was a con man – I would scour the internet and find the people who are actually listening and seem to be interested in that, and then immediately try to sell some type of stock to them. especially if someone knows that Dyer was one of the guys involved with the Biscardi freezer.
Everybody knows that.
Right. So, yeah, it's theoretically possible, but the odds are so incredibly. No.
I'm just checking. I think Minnow Films may have been, because we've been, again, the TBRC gets approached all the time. They may have actually contacted us for whatever it is they're filming. So, anybody got anything else they want to talk about?
No, I was just thinking, I'm sure Minnow Films are the company that was in contact with me about 4 years ago that wanted to do a documentary about Bigfoot. And talking to them, it became fairly obvious that what they wanted to do was a show about the people that were hunting Bigfoot.
Yeah, Minnow Films. I just did a search in my inbox. Absolutely, they reached out to us. So yeah, these guys have been poking around. And again, we chose not to do anything with them because we don't know how it's going to be used. And you're right; they wanted to talk about the people in Bigfoot, and we didn't want to be the subject of anything like that.
Yeah.
Apparently Dyer, though, he's fine with it. He's good with it.
Yeah, he's good. Well, he's really lucky. I mean, to have like a total hoax and then actually shoot one in the back of the head in his underwear.
What are the odds?
I mean, that's pretty unusual.
I shot a Bigfoot in my underwear. What was he doing in your underwear? How did he get
it? Here's a question. I mean, it's not really part of the year, but the Jeff Zornow, that's a great planet name. Do either of you have a speculation or ideas as to why Sasquatch are so large? Since great apes are in the ballpark of human size or smaller for the most part, it's curious to wonder biologically why Sasquatch would need to be so big.
I don't think they
need to be big. I think it just turned out that way.
Perfect example of I don't know right here.
Exactly.
I have no idea.
Perfect.
Why an animal?
Actually, any question about Bigfoot we've ever done on the show, I don't know.
I have heard people throw out Bergman's rule before and try to use that as a way of legitimizing the subject. Bergman's rule basically says that as mammals get closer to the pole, they will get larger, and as they get closer to the equator, they will get smaller.
Yes.
And they've gone as far as to try to take sighting reports and say, well, you know, the further up you get into Canada, the larger the individuals are that are reported, and this confirms to Bergman's rule, but nobody really knows.
Yeah.
Well, that would, yeah. Well, yeah, I remember that study was in, I think it was Man-Like Monsters on Trial, that book that was trying to see the correlation. If you take all this, like, if sightings in Southern California, if there had been, were of a 350-pound creature, apparently, and then the ones up in British Columbia were more like 500, and there was a correlation, then the argument is that that's supportive evidence that these things are not imaginary. Why would people be making up, you know, weights that correlate to Bergman's rule?
Why would a grizzly bear be as big as it is?
Well, yeah,
grizzly bears are huge. They have probably, you know, I would assume the same sort of diet.
Well, I think one thing, as far as related to this question, I mean, I don't think it's like the question almost asked, like, why did they choose to be? They're not. It would just evolve that way. But if these things are real, the bigger they are individually would explain why there's so few of them. And I forgot whatever that principle is, but Krantz talks about it in his big book. Basically, the bigger an animal is in an ecosystem, the less there are of them. That's why there's billions and billions of ants and millions of squirrels and thousands of bears. So if you kept going up, bigger and that's because the bigger an animal is, the more area it would need to make out its eating niche. So I think that's actually pretty good.
I mean, if there is, as far as I know, only one Jabba the Hutt.
He's pretty big,
yeah, and slow moving.
And from what I've heard on the internet is that there's only like 6 blue whales, and they're really big. They're like the biggest thing on. So that makes
far more.
It would be terrestrial and not oceany, graphic-y.
But so you like? But you can ask the same question: why are people so big? We never used to be this big. We were tall in the Middle Ages, and then we got shorter, and now we're getting bigger, and it's down to diet.
Isn't it nutrition?
We don't have to move around as much.
Better food. You know, available, and of course, genetics comes into that. The Dutch are much taller than us.
Our heads are getting bigger.
Much taller than the South Koreans, who are taller than the North Koreans.
Oh, they don't eat well in North Korea, right?
Yeah, a lot of it's down to diet. I read somewhere that the average Japanese person is something like about 3 inches taller now than they were during the war.
No kidding.
There's been a big sale on racks.
Yeah. Are they stretching them out?
Because the diet is so much better now than it was 60, 70 years ago.
Evolution can happen quick, man. That's what's cool about it. I mean,
you probably don't notice it so much where you are, but over here we have lots of very old buildings and old pubs and old houses. And you walk into them, and me at 6'4", I have to duck a long way to get through some of these doorways.
Right.
You know, it's not unusual for the doorway to be at sort of 5'6", 5'7" off the ground. And that gives us an indication as to how tall people were 300 years ago.
You would have been a giant in the 1500s.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
You would have written ballads about you.
And certainly compared to my people in
Malta. Oh,
veritable giant.
No, please don't say that.
Maltese people are very short. All my relatives, I mean, they struggle to get over about sort of 5'3", 5'4".
Poor bastards.
You could ask the same question about humans. Why are we so big compared to chimpanzees? We don't need to be this big.
No, I mean, and clearly none of us are smart enough to know the answer to this, or we haven't done the right kind of study.
I just did read something about that. I thought part of it is because we haven't had to struggle and burn as many calories to survive. We've been able to use our brains. We've become more sedentary, and that's one reason we've become bigger.
I think
you're talking about fatter or taller?
Well, it's actually both. I mean, because we can, and then we, I mean, we can work our bodies through exercise, but we have more time to ingest food.
See here, I would say that we probably should have stopped at I don't know, because right now we are pooling,
our ignorance. Must be true.
This is just big ignorant stew that we're making here on the Bigfoot Show. Go ahead.
I suspect it's because we, unlike chimpanzees, we discovered how nice bacon is.
Sam, you're going to say something?
No, I've had the mute button on.
All right. Somebody with the odd name of Chai Skeptic can't believe.
Came in a long time ago, too. I remember he's kind of a jackass.
You jackass. Well, no, his questions are not jackassery, though, except...
some of them are.
So, well, he's got three in a row here, and the first one, the other one I can speak to, is he said he'd love to hear more about Area X. He said, all said, there's not much in detail overall. The previous shows, it seems like pretty amazing things happen out there, either hillbillies hoaxing the team or the real deal. So I just happened to be listening earlier today to episode 39, which was our show where I was in Oklahoma by myself and I interviewed the folks down there, you know, Alton and Paul and Daryl and some of the other guys. And it in that show, Daryl brings up the fact that a couple of our guys have been bluff charged. He actually says that in the show. And that's something that I hadn't talked about before because I forgot that it actually had been put out there. So one of the things that I was also on the Bigfoot forums earlier in the week, and, you know, there are people who are skeptical and don't understand how we can be so certain that what we're dealing with is not hillbillies, quote unquote, hoaxing us. And I would say the instances that he talked about, he mentioned that we have had bluff charge. And if you are a hillbilly who will put yourself in a monkey suit that makes you look like you're very, very tall and very, very wide, and then charge at a guy who is armed through the bushes, then more power to you.
I mean, that's assuming that what he says happened. I mean, I'm not saying he would be lying, but we see that again. It's another story.
Well, I'll tell you, there have been, and I've been thinking about this since I listened to this earlier in the day. I can think of two instances where this happened. One instance, the guy was alone, but I was there. That was during the week that I was there. So I saw the guy moments after that, and he wasn't lying. And the other
I'm not saying he was lying.
But what I'm saying
is lying, but I'm saying
hold on, let me finish. So the first guy was by himself. The second time it happened, there were multiple people involved. I think at least two, perhaps three. One of them, it was at night, and one of them had the thermal and saw the conical head and saw the broad shoulders and saw the thing running away into the bushes. So when people ask us, how do you know? Now, again, you're right. We could still be lying, right?
It could be lying.
But
just,
no,
yeah.
We're either, what I'm saying is, how do you know it's not hillbillies? That's one of the ways that we know it's not hillbillies. We could still not be telling the truth. It's entirely possible that these things did not happen, that it's fiction. But as I said all along, it's either that we're lying or we're telling the truth, because the idea that there's hoaxers out there running around with pointy-headed ape costumes, you know, into people who are armed seems extraordinarily unlikely to me.
There's a third option, that you're telling the truth, but you're mistaken.
Yeah.
Okay, so what else could it be?
Pointy-headed hillbilly.
So in the instance of the first case, the person who was involved saw the outline of the animal, large, black. We put another guy in the same spot. It was, he's like 6 feet something. This thing was significantly taller and significantly wider, which was actually the more striking thing. He was maybe a foot or so taller, seven and a half feet tall, but like three times as wide. In the other case, like I said, one of them saw part of the animal in his flashlight beam. The other one saw it running up the hill in his thermal. I don't know. Could it have been something else? Yeah, I don't think it was a bear, because a bear isn't going to be standing up and running at you through the bushes, through the trees, 7.5 feet tall. I don't think it's a dude, you know, in a suit, because apparently he doesn't care about getting shot, if that's the case. So could I be mistaken? Well, I don't know. I mean, there are vanishingly small numbers of things that fit the description of what have been reported. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, either, that gets back to the, how are you so sure? How do you know it's not hillbilly hoaxing you? That would be not the only exhibit, but that would be a prime exhibit of one of the reasons why we know it's not hillbilly hoaxing us.
I think it's a good idea for a show, though. Hillbilly hoaxing?
Well, this ties back into Paul's idea. You know, you have to get woodsmen, right, to be the guys who are out there trying to hide from you out in the bushes. Otherwise, if it's just some guy from the city, if it's like me.
And to make it fun, they're going to be armed.
If it was me, I'd get caught like in 5 minutes. But if it was somebody who actually knew something about the woods, that might be interesting.
Now, I just wanted to say, go ahead, Paul.
Or instead of having a real person, put a orangutan on this island. See how long it takes them to spot one of those.
Yeah.
It would cut down on cost. You wouldn't have to pay for an extra actor.
Poor orangutan, though.
You just have to pay for the orangutan.
See, that would be cruel to the orangutan.
No, they're just sitting around in zoos doing fuck all.
since they're not contributing to society, to our entertainment.
Put them to work.
Especially in the zoo, when they're sitting back in the corner doing nothing, it's like they're not even all that worthwhile.
They don't even try to entertain.
Come on, those face flaps are really interesting to look at.
We could at least put them out in the wild and take photos of them and pretend they're Bigfoot.
So, Chai Skeptic's next comment is talking about Scott's sighting, his video, wanting posts with outlines. Haven't you done that? I've seen those.
Yeah,
did somebody else do those? Was that on the
BFF? Yeah, no, it's on the Bigfoot forums.
Way back in the day, probably the old Bigfoot forums.
Back in the 80s.
Which means it's not there anymore because all the images are gone.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah, so do it again.
An animated GIF. I don't go to Bigfoot forums anymore. I don't know. What I'm reading what he's wrote. I cannot see anything in the footage. That's because you're a Chai Skeptic. Would also love for Scott and Gerald to explain everything again in detail. We'll do that just for you, Chai, and possibly even hear from the kids who had the initial sighting.
In defense of Chai Skeptic, I can't see anything in the footage either.
Well, but Paul, a lot of people don't know you're actually literally blind. People don't know that.
And that's the annoying thing. Scott, I know you, and I want to see something in that footage, but I can't.
Well,
easy for me to say, wow, that's fantastic. I can see that. I can see that arm. But I can't. I have to be honest. I can't see
it.
No,
but, you know, part of the problem is, which show was it that put the wrong footage on?
That was the A&E show.
Dude, before I even met you, I bought that stupid thing on VHS. That's how long ago it was. I watched that thing like, I don't see a damn thing. It's because there was nothing there.
That's right. Because when Daryl, for those who haven't heard this before, when Daryl sent him the original tape, he didn't cue it up. And when we took however long it took to get to the top of that hill, about halfway up, he thought he saw something. He was like, I think so. And he's pointing, and I didn't see anything then. And then after that happened, we went up. And then when we saw the red eyes and the shoulder head thing was then there. So that's why when Sightings asked me to go on their show, I said, yeah, I'll do it on the condition that you actually use the footage we were referring to.
Right.
And a great thing they did, and I think I've mentioned this on the show, is when I showed up to be interviewed on Sightings, they actually had the producer from that first show there to verify that it was that first tape. So he knew there wasn't any monkey business going on. And he verified, that's the same tape. And then they forwarded it. It was, Daryl didn't know about it. He figured he just sent it to them.
Right.
So
you're saying I might have been looking at the wrong footage all these years.
If you looked at the A&E one,
If you're looking at the A&E, that's not it. It was that's the wrong footage.
I've got no idea. You're gonna have to send me the footage.
When I saw the real footage, and I don't think I saw the actual footage until I saw it on the BFF, and I saw the outlines. Yeah. Then I could see what you were talking about.
Yeah.
But in that A&E thing, I just thought it was crazy shit.
No, and it was so – I was so miffed when it came out. I was just like – but having worked in TV, I know.
One of the things that's interesting is why was Daryl crying? Well, because he was having a pretty significant experience. I mean, that one seems like a pretty easy question to answer.
Yeah.
It makes the experience more plausible.
I think – when it happened, you know, and again, I'm over to the side. I'm about 15 feet to the right of Daryl, and we had been taping. I had been taping something low down where the glowing red eyes thing was happening. That was about 10 minutes of that. And then when we did this, the separation thing, I go to the right, and Daryl wheels around, and all of a sudden now he's taping upward. And again, extremely thick vegetation where you can't see more than 3 feet. If you, yep, if you move 3 feet, you can't see what you're seeing. I mean, he was losing it then. He was having a really strong emotional reaction. You can hear me on the original tape telling him, just take it easy, take it easy. And then when, after he taped for 30 seconds, he was crying. I mean, there were tears in his eyes. And there was, I had to literally, I would say of any time in adult life, I've never had this feeling of like having to really keep the fear out, like that vibe.
So and I don't want to get too, too.
Oh my God. I mean, he was terrified and I was getting terrified. So, you know, I don't rule out things when people talk about infrasound, right, and stuff like that. That could be part and parcel of what, right, these things do, if in fact they exist.
Right.
But all I knew is that he was scared shitless and I was getting close to that level. So I had to be the most rational one there and say, you know, we don't have any pepper spray. We have no gun. Let's get off the hill, because he had just taped something. And I was assuming, having not seen what he had seen, he had taped for about 30 seconds. And then when we went down, we popped the videotape and you can see the shoulder and the head, or most people can see it because it does move. And Paul, if you ever are at a conference sometime, I'll bring it there and you can see what I'm talking about. Now, all that said, and we've talked about this on the show as well, it's evidentiary wise, it doesn't mean squat because it's a video image. You know, do I believe to this day that it in all probability is a Sasquatch? Yes. Of everything I experienced that day, contemplating the other possibilities, that makes the most sense. Given that we saw an animal within close proximity with the glowing red eyes, the kids had the sighting at the base of that hill a few weeks earlier, mm-hmm, the history of the area, taking that all into consideration, I still think the highest probability is that that's what happened. Let's go to a clip.
And then his question is, well, if we had a clip, we would. Yeah. In fact, in this case, we could have a clip, but we're a podcast. His question is, why did they just walk away? Well, what else are you going to do? I mean, you're having this experience. I mean, literally,
yeah,
what else would you do? You're not armed.
Yeah.
You don't have like, exactly, a DNA dart with you.
Yeah.
You are looking uphill at this thing that is freaking you the hell out.
Yeah. And again, remember, I'm not seeing it because Daryl distaped it, turned to me, and I'm probably now within 5 feet of Daryl. And now he's whispering to me, crying, like, it's right there, man. And again, what I had seen, you know, the few minutes earlier where the eyes low down, the red eyes.
Right.
He's now taping something, tapes it for 30 seconds. He's pointing. You see his finger come in on the video. Mm-hmm. Camera goes limp in his hand. He's crying. And now he's whispering like he doesn't want, like, I don't know how close this thing he's talking about. I'm not going to go barge. People go, why don't you just walk right up there?
Yeah.
And exactly to your point, Brian, it was very charged, the circumstance. I mean, I would think somewhat similar to what happened to you down in Oklahoma, that type, when you said you saw that eye stuff.
There are moments, and this is why this is interesting to me. There were individual moments where I felt that charge you're talking about. Yeah. And I don't know what it is, and I'm not going to say that I know what it was, but there were individual moments where there's something like buzzing in the air. You can actually,
yeah,
sense it. And I don't know what it is. I never got to the point where I wanted to cry, but I definitely felt,
yeah,
something like right in my chest at least two different times. But that was it. And as,
yeah,
soon as you leave that scenario, it goes away.
Yeah. And you know, if there is something to that whole infrasound or something that these beings could generate, and again, this doesn't have to be some new agey,
no, not at all,
interdimensional, no, thing at all.
Infrasound,
we know that. Yeah. I mean, this could go back that if, in fact, our relatives, Homo erectus, were, you know, confronted their relatives, if, in fact, it's Giganto, that some kind of defense mechanism developed between these two creatures half a million years ago or whatever, and that would perhaps still live on genetically between, you know,
right,
progeny, so to speak.
Right, right.
So who knows? Yeah, it's still the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me that day. And I would hope that I'm an objective enough and critical thinking enough person to consider in a hard, tough manner, okay, could I have been hoaxed? what is it? If it's a misperception, what was it that I misperceived?
Right.
What else could it be on that video? I mean, to me, it is clearly on that video, the one either that Paul did or didn't see. It's either a guy in a suit or it's a Sasquatch.
Because you can see the side of the head, you can see the shoulder, you can see the
arm. And it tilts out.
Right.
And,
it's no bear. It's not a bear.
It's no.
And not it's a cat.
White.
Right.
Yeah,
it's light color, too. Yeah.
They live.
So looking forward, let's just talk about 2013 now, right?
The year of the Sasquatch.
Nice.
So what do we look forward to in 2013? What would be...
Same shit, different day?
No, what do we look forward to? What do we look forward to? What do we want to see have happen in 2013?
Sykes' project has...
Scott?
Sam. I thought I dropped off. I'm still here.
No, I'm still here.
A confirmation.
Oh, here he is.
Are you here?
Say again. You dropped off for a second.
I was going to say.
Said Sykes.
I think it would be great that if the Sykes project had some type of unknown primate designation, and they could link it on, you know, like Disitel was saying, that they'd be able to tell like what particular branch it was, and right. would be another indicator toward that these beings are probably real. That would be my hope, I think. Unless everybody starts wanting to go shoot one immediately, then no. Hello?
Hello.
Yep.
Oh
yeah, that's
oh,
me.
Sorry.
No. Paul?
Okay. A good report from Sykes, one way or the other. Don't care whether it proves Bigfoot or not. Just a decent scientific report would be good.
Yeah.
That's all I want. If I can't have that, then more fun and games from Ketchum all the way through the year. Keeps me entertained. And a Bigfoot in a freezer.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
No. I honestly, at this point, I want Sykes to produce a report. I genuinely don't care whether it is a positive or negative report.
No, because the report is a report.
Want it to be, yeah. Scientific and decent and done the right way to show Ketchum types how to do a scientific report on DNA.
There was either in the last show or the show before that, we said that, you know, science is sometimes you win them and sometimes you lose them, and you need to have a result. If you don't have a result, then you're not doing it right.
That Paul's point, I think, should be reemphasized. That was a really good point. That is, even if it doesn't come out as designating some type of unknown primate, that others who may be interested in the DNA field, geneticists, and as well as the followers of this phenomena, will hopefully learn a little bit more about a bona fide scientific method like that. And so that makes it, that's a good thing.
Samuel?
Sykes, all the way.
Yeah.
I think Scott just echoed one of my hopes is that even if this doesn't, if this doesn't settle the debate, that maybe it will at least fuel it in a positive scientific-y direction. I, for one, look forward to the Melba fiasco just absolutely imploding sometime, probably before the summer. I think that this is going to be the K2 extinction event of Bigfoot. I really do. I look back at the Georgia hoax and I look at how that kind of impacted the field and the subject. And you had a lot of people just completely drop out after that. And I think when this thing inevitably doesn't pan out the way that it's been promised, you're going to see that on a much more massive scale. And it's going to make great watching. Like Paul said, it's going to be very entertaining. And the longer it drags out, the more fodder that we'll have for the show.
Yeah, I'm torn because on the one hand, obviously we need fodder for the show. If we're going to do 16 of these next year, we're going to need some help. but on the other hand, I'm really ready for Ketchum to just disappear into the dustbin of history. And So I look forward to her flaming out as well. And once we have this paper and once real scientists can look at it and judge it for whatever it is, good or bad or indifferent, I think that would be a good thing. And then, you know, hopefully she'll just be gone. Sykes, my biggest fear for Sykes is that there will be a lot of inconclusive data in there. You know, he's got a hair of ours. So we have a vested interest at TBRC. I would love to see that hair. I want to know what it is. I want to know whatever it is. It is a weird freaking hair. Just looking at it, the morphology of the hair is odd. So I would love to know what it is, one way or the other. What I would be bothered by is if he comes out and says, well, we got six samples we looked at, and one of them is clearly, you know, horse or whatever. The other ones, we don't know. That would bother. I don't even know if that's possible in DNA. I presume that it is possible to have totally inconclusive results. That would bum me out, I think, quite a bit.
Hey, Brian, a quick question about the sample. I mean, I don't want to violate any you know, secrecy things you got going there. Yeah. But so was it – I mean, how do you know for sure, like, when you send that hair, that as far as the follicle, which is the only place they can get the DNA from, correct?
No, I believe he can get hair – he can get DNA from the shaft, I believe.
Shaft?
Yeah.
Really?
I believe they can, and I don't – you know, clearly, I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Oh, I thought – well, that's interesting. I thought it had to be the follicle, and it had to be, like, gotten pretty quick and put in alcohol and all that stuff. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's been advanced now that they can do that.
Yeah, the hair that we have has a root, has a sort of a bulb at the end in the root. There's no medulla present. We can't see a medulla in there. And the top of the hair, the end of the hair, is frayed. It's obviously it's never been cut. It's just sort of worn to a fray. So it's a really weird looking hair. Like I said, it doesn't immediately jump out as any one thing to us looking at it, and we are, of course, at the end of the day, lay people, but I want to know what it is, one way or the other, and I hope that he can answer that question. And so my biggest fear for Sykes is that we don't know, and obviously I hope that we can find some kind of evidence that is conclusive from Area X. This hair could be a piece of that, if it turns out to be something interesting. If it turns out to be raccoon, then of course, who cares? But
at least his unknown will be better than the unknown that we've been getting. I mean, if he comes back and says, you know, the DNA was too degraded, you know, it was contaminated, we couldn't get a clean sequence or whatever, you'll know that that's what you got. I mean, even if it's a bust, he will tell you in no uncertain terms, this has been a bust.
Yeah.
No dragging you along, you know, no false promises, no, you know, it's unknown in air quotes when really it's too degraded to know.
Yeah. I mean, he'll tell you. I mean, as we said earlier, he'll say, I don't know, if he doesn't know. And that would be a bummer.
Know.
But anyway.
And I don't think it'll necessarily quell, I mean, apart from any kind of natural cyclical up and down of interest in Bigfoot. But if it does come back negative, I don't think it's going to, you know, quell the search for a lot of people. I think it's just, well, this particular batch didn't have one. And we know, like, people like Disatel, who was on the show, is open, if he knows the people involved, mm-hmm. he's probably open at doing some sequencing mm-hmm. Of other samples. So it's mm-hmm. not like, well, since Sykes is one of the world's biggest experts and nothing came back, it doesn't mean, like, well, it's over, obviously. It just...
No. I mean, if he's got our hair, if it turns out to be inconclusive or a kitty cat, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter. We just go back and try again. I mean, that's how this works.
Now, what if it came back and he had one word and he said hillbilly?
Pointy-headed hillbilly.
That would be something, because it's clearly not a human hair. That would be something. it doesn't appear to be human hair. Yeah, he would say
Hillbilius Maximus.
Paul, say hillbilly. I'm not even sure how somebody from England would say that.
I don't think we ever say hillbilly.
Oh, there it is. That wasn't as good as I was hoping.
Hillbilly.
All right.
We don't have them here.
No, you've driven them all away, haven't you?
We've got more billies.
What's the equivalent of the southeast of the United States of America in England? Is there such a thing?
Essex.
I don't see that. That's funny. I have no idea if that's funny or not. Essex. Okay, I'll take your report.
David?
We have Essex is a county to the north and east of London. We have a show that is very similar to Jersey Shore called The Only Way is Essex. And it is every bit as cringeworthy as Jersey Shore is.
I see.
But there you go. It's odd because this is a tiny country and it is very diverse. I mean, we've got cities like Liverpool and Manchester that are 30 miles apart and have completely different accents. I mean, just
it's like
unbelievably
you have
different
to
accents.
They just come up with new accents.
Strange foods, yeah.
So do we have anything else we want to talk about Bigfoot related in this show?
We didn't talk about the brown footage.
Didn't we talk about that last show, or no?
No, no.
About the what?
The brown. We didn't talk about the brown footage
post last show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about that. I can't believe I, for some reason, thought that we had.
We talked about the Provo video and the.
Oh, last. Right.
Wait a minute. Isn't this? Oh, the Stacey Brown. Isn't that the one that Dyer is probably connected to? I thought. Tent.
The Dyer footage is the tent footage. The brown right. footage is a thermal video from the Florida Panhandle. That was
right,
filmed by a father-son duo.
Oh,
yes,
where is that?
And Cliff Barackman. Oh, yeah, we hadn't talked about this. Cliff did a big write-up. I actually posted to our Facebook wall back on the 5th of December.
Proves, by the way, that we do absolutely zero show prep.
None.
If anybody's ever wondered.
If there was any question.
This cinches it up right here.
Yeah. We don't even... Well, sometimes we have a list of things to talk about. We didn't even have that this time. Yeah, the brown footage is interesting because these two guys are out with a thermal, a FLIR, and I'm not sure which model it was. I don't even know if it says in the write-up that that Cliff did. But they film a thing peeking around a tree, and then it jumps from one tree to the other, and you see four appendages.
Yeah.
You see a head. It is not. I mean, it's not misidentification, right? It's either real or it's fake. There's no two ways about it.
And I think I think it's fake. To me, I know this is a total perceptive one. I know you're pretty convinced of it, but to me,
what I am is it looks big. I mean, so Cliff shows some comparison photos, but we don't know that the comparison photos were done correctly. But it looks very large in the comparison photos. It has some weird hands. Like, the hands are, like, really, really big. Like, it's wearing catcher's mitts or something. I think it's a really weird video. I don't think that it's obviously fake, but I don't think it's obviously real either.
I think it's CG'd. That's what it looks like to me.
See,
Here's why. It's first off, it's supposedly a FLIR. It's not very FLIR-y looking. It looks muted. And plus, the motion of it is stuttery to me. I mean, I work in video a lot. And it looks animated. It lacks, like, you look at Mike Green's video where that thing is whatever, it's a man or it's either a man or a Squatch, obviously, in Green's video. But it's the fluidity of motion coming up to it. It's clearly something being taped there. This looks like looks cartoony to me.
So you're suggesting it's a complete fabrication.
Yeah. And because it's connected to some TV show too, wasn't it? That was there is something. I'm looking right now.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be on Finding Bigfoot at some point.
No. I mean, well, yeah, keep talking. I'm looking actually for an email from
Stacey Brown Sr. and Jr. are the minds behind the website, The Sasquatch Hunters. I don't think there's a TV show behind it. They use a FLIR Scout thermal imager. So that's the model they were using. Personally, the CGI thing, I have a hard time. I don't think anybody's making a CGI of a Bigfoot and putting it out there as real. That just seems more implausible. If you wanted to fake this, you'd fake it with a guy. I don't think you would learn how to use computer software to come up with something like this. But I don't know. Who knows?
I don't. Yeah, I was going to say. I thought maybe I sent you guys the email. I'm looking for it now. I don't think he wants to be named on it. But he's a big fan of the show, and he knows a guy who works for the studios doing CGI. And I sent him a link. And I said, how hard would it be to make that? And he says, it'd be very easy to do that. In fact, he thought it looked fake to him. That was
it. Wasn't there a viral video a while back? Supposedly it was tied to the World War Z movie that's coming out. But it was a thermal of a bunch of zombies chasing some guy down an alley. And they eventually tear him apart. But yeah, I mean, it looked completely real, but you knew, you know, going into it that it was completely fake. And to Scott's point, I mean, yeah, it could be done. I don't necessarily think that that means that it was done. I'm with Brian. I think if you were going to do this, the simplest answer would be that you simply got somebody out there, either in, you know, a full body suit or something, you know, close to it, and then just set the tuning on the thermal off enough to where you couldn't see any real resolution, and you've got a good video.
I think my biggest issue with it is the head looks so disconnected from the shoulders. I mean, it looks like it's sitting way up high on the shoulders, but I don't know. I think it's super inconclusive just because we don't have good enough.
Right.
We can't see where it was taken. You know, they just showed another FLIR image of the spot. There's a picture of a tree, but it wasn't from the same spot where they took the video. So the recreation is hard to use to verify or completely debunk it.
If you go to Cliff's website, and it's a little confusing because he has two websites. He has the North American Bigfoot blog, and then he has his own cliffbrackman.com website.
Yeah.
If you go to the second one, he's got a lot more information about it, and they even show a daytime picture of the tree.
That's the link from our Facebook page. The cliffbrackman.com.
I don't know.
That's the one. Yeah, because it shows the tree. It shows the tree. So I don't know. It's another one of those things that, and again, let's just say it was real. Let's just say it was so.
It does. Unfortunately, they do deserve to be, you know, at least a little bit of a pat on the back. I mean, obviously, some work went into this post event.
Absolutely.
I mean, at least they didn't just throw up a video on YouTube and say, "Oh my God, Sasquatch!" You know. They put out some effort, and I've seen some of the discussion going on the Bigfoot forums about it, and at least one of the guys involved with this group seems to be, you know, pretty level headed, pretty on the up and up.
I have a hard time believing that somebody, well, and maybe this is where Scott will just say that I'm naive.
Wishful thinking.
No, somebody who's in the field. I think my impression would be that if someone was going to completely just totally fabricate something, they're going to come from left field and we've never heard of them before. I don't think these two guys who have been out here and involved in the field are just going to like do this. I don't think they are. I think if when you see hoaxes, they're just not all that complicated, right? This just does not, to me, scream out hoax. It just doesn't.
I'm just, you know, I'm going purely, and you know, just like the Patterson film, the most important thing is the actual film itself, mm-hmm. or the thing. And it's just, when I've watched it, I probably watched it at least 15 times.
The Patterson film? I would have thought you'd seen that more.
No. This brown footage is that it does not. It's lack of fluidity. It moves very in an animated. To my eye, and again, it's not like I say this about every piece of footage. Mike Green's footage is very interesting to me. I think it could very well be a Sasquatch. But this looks put on. In fact, the guy who wrote back, LeMay, I found the email if you guys want to hear it just real quick. It's just, he says, oh, by the way, I misspoke for me. He's not saying he thinks it's probably fake. He's just saying that it could easily be fake. He goes, he thinks if it was done, it was footage of somebody, and then it was just treated to elongate the arm shape as. Change of shape, the stuff that they talk about in the video suggests it's more than just one person, blah, blah, blah. And it could be done like in a couple of days, he said.
Well, you know, that is the one thing, Brian, you were mentioning the head and its position to the shoulders. That's the one thing that bothers me is when you see the hand on the backswing,
it's huge.
It really does look like somebody has exaggerated that.
Yeah,
it doesn't look natural at all. I mean, it does look like somebody took a blur tool in Photoshop or, you know.
Well, you know what happens
of that would be.
In the world of Sasquatchery now, someone will say, well, it's holding a baby. That's what always seems to come up. It's holding a young one.
Well, then, and also my question is, why is it not more FLIR-y looking? Why is it so muted? It's like it's supposed to be a FLIR image. Why isn't it glowy? It's very
they have it reversed. They have it that you can do white hot or black hot, and they're using black hot. So you're seeing it. Opposite of how people are usually shoot. I don't know why they did black hot versus white hot, but they just flipped it around. So it's still totally within spec. I mean that does look like a FLIR image. In fact, I think I know a guy who has one of these. When I was in California this past summer, I'm looking at the unit now. he had this. It does have the option of recording film. I mean, sorry, video. What I'm trying to find on their site right now is how many frames per second it takes, because I think that would explain the sort of jerkiness of the video. But yeah, and I don't see anything on here that even talks about that, unfortunately. But it looks totally. It doesn't look out of place from what I've seen these units work. It looks right. It just the image, yeah, the hand is gigantic on that thing, and the head.
But his legs. What's the name of it again? I'm going to look at it one more time. I remember the legs looking a little too skinny.
Go to our Facebook page and check on December 5th. There's a link to Cliff's website, and the video is embedded there.
Is the video that we see, is that a cropped video or is that it?
That looks like the actual, that looks like the full frame, because you can see the FLIR video. It looks like the same video examples on the FLIR website. That looks like a full frame to me.
You know, another thing, and you know that ghost, that strange hooded figure thing?
Oh yeah, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, yeah, that
Slender Man.
That was awesome. I just think Slender Man. That's exactly what that was. Yeah, that's exactly. Right.
I think it's just added. It's a Photoshop. Nobody even talks about that. It just looks like it's been added onto the image.
It's a moth or something.
Moth. Yeah. Wait a minute. December 5th. Okay, just talk amongst yourselves. Okay. Sorry. Here it is. The brown footage. All right.
Yeah.
Ads. You guys can talk. I'm just
everyone listening
to look
can just go get a Coke or something.
Yeah,
you know, just you know,
feed the cup once.
Now's a chance to use the restroom if you need to.
And
so it peaks out at like 14 seconds. It jumps across at 15. I mean, the whole thing is like 3 seconds long.
And I don't like the whole way the graphics are before it. It's coming at you. It just seems very. It seems very like they're trying to sell something to me.
Well, yeah, but a lot of these guys, they overproduce. What video are you looking at? Because the one on Cliff's page doesn't have anything ahead of it.
I'll use the one on our. Yeah, I just saw it again. It doesn't have any. Okay, went to Cliff's page and I couldn't. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyway, so we've just beat the crap out of that poor video. So official. What I think, plausible. No idea.
I think possible, but probably animated. Yeah, oh my God, I just watched it again in slow-mo. Totally looks fake. It's so fake.
I don't think it's so fake.
Wait, but you're right. Neither of us know. We looked at a clip, and once again.
I can't authenticate any kind of Bigfoot video now without Bobo jumping out in front of it.
It's true. If we had Bobo.
It's a horse!
We need to know what... Bobo is now our official unit of measure when it comes to Bigfoot size.
Yeah.
So we need to know how many Bobos is this thing. Is it 1.5 Bobos? Is it 2 Bobos? It's very important.
It looks actually like about 75% of Bobo, especially in the lower legs. I don't think Bobo's legs have been that skinny since he was 4.
I think it's a bit fake.
Dodgy. Say dodgy.
Dodgy.
There you go. That's a British
thing. It's just dodgy. Yeah.
It's...
It looks animated. It doesn't look natural to me at all.
So Sam, what do you think?
I don't think there's enough there for going one way or the other. I mean, there's things that bug me about it. I mean, like I said, the hand really bugs me.
Yeah, I agree.
But at the same time, I mean, is there enough there for me to say that it's conclusively a hoax? Well, no, there's not.
I agree.
Have you guys seen this thing called the Patterson film?
It's plausible.
Holy moly.
It's plausible.
That is really.
So here we go. So here we have. So people are spending. I mean, this is not top of the line FLIR equipment, right? But it's still going to be. I think this thing, I'm pretty sure, is like $1,500, right? I'm not 100% sure I'm right about that, but it's pretty darn expensive. The dude who I know who has one treated this thing like it was the most expensive thing he owns. And it may have been. I don't know. So this isn't a cheap device. Let's just pretend it's real for a second. Well, we can't, right? There is no value at the end of the day in capturing these images. And that completely sucks because if you're out there, you're dropping your hard-earned cash on this stuff, you're putting yourself where you think they are, you're making a video like this, and you're very excited, and you should be because that demonstrates quite a bit of effort on your part, and then you stick it out there, and a bunch of yahoos on an internet show like us sit there, ah, I don't know, it looks fake. I don't know. I mean, so what is the value?
It's fair to say, I mean, these things are close to about $3,000, aren't they?
Is it that much? I have no idea how much that costs.
Yeah, it depends on the resolution, but they range somewhere between about $2,000 and $3,000, depending on resolution.
So I'm guessing for these guys,
it's a lot of money.
That's a pretty significant investment.
Yeah.
And now they have captured what they wanted. You know, why did they buy this thing? This is exactly why they bought this thing, to capture this exact moment. And
we're assuming that's the case. If it's not a fake, we don't know that. We don't know. We don't.
That's what I'm saying. Pretend like it's not. Pretend like you're these dudes. You're out there. Well, you know, you've got a very strong correlation. You know where they're coming from.
You've
recorded this video.
Exactly. Well, remember, Daryl shot that video. Not
yeah,
me,
I know, but, I know. But I'm saying you because you're associated with it, and you were standing 5 feet from him or whatever it was.
Right, exactly. Well, what I would say is this. Let's say you have the scenario where you go out to a zone, you know you're not doing any faking, and you get an image like this, and you didn't do any faking. Nobody else could have faked it. You would know, in all strong probability, given the shape of this thing, using this video as an example, that in all probability that it probably was not a human, given the shape and how it's, again, doctored or not. You would know. It's just like it's just a keepsake. It's not not everybody has to do something for it to be scientifically valid. If they try to present it as scientifically valid, you know, they're going to run into the obstacles that they should run into. It's video. It's imagery. So it just depends what it means to the particular individual, you know, and that's different for everybody.
But ultimately, video is useless.
Well, it can be. I mean, for verification, yes. For inspiration, hey, I was going to check out this area, and now I got this video. Then it would be some kind of confirmation. But
it's great for yahoos with a Bigfoot related podcast.
Exactly,
they can fill 15.
It gives
minutes
us. I think we've already gone 12 minutes too far in this show already. I think we've lost both viewers. Listeners.
Viewers. Well, we the last show I want to talk about, North Korea has found a unicorn lair. This is huge news. I can't believe this hasn't been more widely discussed out in the world. But
I'm amazed it hasn't made more publicity.
Archaeologists of the History Institute of the DPRK Academy of Social Sciences have recently confirmed a lair of the unicorn rode by King Tongmyong, founder of the Koguryo Kingdom. So there you go. Unicorns are 100% real. Scientists have found their lair.
And what the brilliant thing about this, I mean, I don't know why we can't have Bigfoot lairs like this, but this the way they recognize that this was a unicorn lair is because it has a rocket out front that has the word unicorn lair carved into it.
See?
Yeah.
See?
Plus the skeleton of the leprechaun didn't hurt either.
So what we're saying
it's easy. This stuff's easy. If the North Koreans can do this, why can't we?
There you go. Apparently, there's a movie out where they invade North America. I mean, so they can. Yeah. They're quite capable of people. All right.
They put a satellite in orbit.
They did.
Please tell me you're going to call this show "I Don't Know."
No, I think it's going to be Melba's quote. What was Melba's quote again?
Yeah.
How can it not be Infinite Monkey Cage? That's what I want to know.
Yes.
I suspect it may be trademarked.
How about a subtitle?
Screw it. It may be Infinite. I might do Infinite. Who knows? You know what?
Infinite Sasquatch Cage.
By the time
you get to Phoenix,
when people are hearing this, they'll already know because they will have downloaded it and they will see what the title is.
If you want, what you should do is anybody listening to this, if they are interested in science, is listen to the Infinite Monkey Cage show. They can podcast it from the BBC website. It is a fantastic show. Really is good.
All right. Well,
after they listen to this one, of course.
After this. Okay. So that's it. Probably the last show of the year.
Barring some early Sykes release.
I think this is the 16th. Which is huge. I mean, we've never done.
Huge.
We've never done this many. I mean, this is like half the shows we ever did. Well, no, it's not, because we're like at 45.
I think it's because we've got nothing better to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let me count. Let me see. 1, 2. Oh, this is 15. Whatever. It's still
great.
It's only the 15. We have to do one more.
See you guys in 2 days.
All right, cool. So we are done, right?
Sure.
And scene. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Merry Christmas.
Or whatever.